The following program has been pre-recorded. The views expressed by the participants are not necessarily those of WHFR Radio or Henry Ford College. Welcome to We Are Not Alone. We're local investigators, as well as world-renowned scientists and ufologists, share their latest evidence in support of the UAP reality. I'm David Twitchell, and for the next hour, we'll be exploring the mysteries of the UFO, UAP, and abduction phenomenon.
Our guest today is Mr. Stan Gordon. Stan has been researching UFO sightings, Bigfoot encounters, and other mysterious events in Pennsylvania since 1959. Since then, he has been involved with the investigation of thousands of unusual incidences. He is the primary investigator of the 1965 UFO crash incident that occurred near Kecksburg, Pennsylvania. Stan has been taking calls on UFO sightings and other strange reports from the public since 1969. And he continues to receive unusual reports on a regular basis. He has lectured both locally and nationally on topics of UFOs, Bigfoot, cryptids, and strange encounters since the late 1960s. And he was listed in the 2005 Fate magazine special, The 100 Most Influential People in Ufology Today. He is the producer of the award-winning UFO video documentary, Kecksburg, The Untold Story. Stan is the author of Silent Invasion, the Pennsylvania UFO Bigfoot casebook, Really Mysterious Pennsylvania, among many others, and his latest book, Creepy Cryptids and Strange UFO Encounters of Pennsylvania. He's been interviewed on TV and radio programs, as well as a number of documentaries discussing his research on these topics. And he was on my radio show a little over a year ago, and we're fortunate to have him with us today. So, welcome back, Stan.
Dave, thanks for having me back on. We appreciate it.
Oh, it's our pleasure. So, tell us about your latest book, Creepy Cryptids and Strange UFO Encounters of Pennsylvania.
Well, you know, when we talk about cryptids, of course, Bigfoot is considered a cryptid. It's a creature that the public reports, but which science has never confirmed exists. And I deal with many, many strange reports, and there were many of them in 2023. But we deal with a lot of different types of unusual creature reports, from the huge Thunderbird sightings to out-of-place animals such as Black Panthers. And I found a very interesting link with those and some of the other anomalies going on. Winged humanoids. You've heard about the Mothman in West Virginia. Well, I found out we had similar reports here in Pennsylvania around the same time. Mm-hmm. Ongoing reports of creatures that float or glide across the ground instead of running quickly. A lot of strange things going on. And I'll tell you, there's no doubt in my mind, last year we had quite an increase in these type of activity.
Mm-hmm. Is this all cryptids and that type of thing, or UFO sightings or UFO encounters?
Oh, it was both. I mean, last year, significant UFO, UAP activity in the state. And a lot of the reports were daylight, lot of them were low-level reports. So there were many, many reports. And actually, in the last couple of years and last year, a very large cylindrical cigar-shaped objects, or as the government's calling them, Tic Tacs in some cases. And a lot of these reports, these objects were just hovering in beautiful afternoons and just instantaneously vanishing. So not accelerating and leaving, just gone. So we had two type of reports. They were doing that, or in other cases, the objects were moving so slow across the sky that different people were commenting that they didn't think that any type of conventional aircraft could move that slow and stay up in the sky at the same time. So that was interesting. But also, quite a number of reports of large, solid, black, triangular objects, again, very low level. And here's what I've been finding more and more. You know, I've been out in the field since 1965. I've been doing this now for, my gosh, going on 65 years. I have never personally seen a Bigfoot or a UFO or a ghost. I've interviewed thousands of witnesses. I've seen a lot of evidence out in the field over the years. You know, for many years, I had teams of scientists and engineers and police officers and military specialists that volunteered their time to go out in the field to investigate these cases. We all did this voluntarily out of our own pockets. And I'll tell you, we investigated some incredible reports over the years. And I continue to receive these reports continually of all kind of anomalies. Even the last 2 hours, a report came in of an anomaly, not a UFO report. And this is what's going on all the time. But the thing is really intriguing. From what I found over the years, and, you know, when I got in, especially back in the late 50s, the 60s, of the cases that could not be explained, and I'm the first one to tell you, when I was out investigating in 65 and since then, I found out at that point that when you take the time to properly investigate a UFO sighting or a cryptid or anything unusual comes in, a lot of the reports, while they're reported by credible people and they seem unusual initially, when you take the time to investigate them, many are determined to be natural or man-made in origin, and that continues to happen. So let's throw that out there right away. A lot of things are explainable, but I can tell you every year reports are coming in you could not easily dismiss, and there were quite a lot of them last year here in Pennsylvania. And so anyhow, when I first got involved in this back in those earlier years, the thought was that the cases we could not explain, a lot of these were extraterrestrial. These were spacecraft from who knew where. Who knows where. But anyhow, the more I've learned about this, and I've been doing this for a long, long time, and I've come to the conclusion that there's more than one origin for the unknown category of the UFO mystery, whatever it might be. Maybe a small percentage might be extraterrestrial, but I'm telling you, there is more and more data showing up. Some of it is very strange and unusual, with both UFOs, UAPs, and other anomalous events that suggest we're dealing with something that has a physical and a non-physical component to it, and for lack of a better term, I'll call it interdimensional right now. And why I'm talking about this is the fact that we have many of these reports of these objects that suddenly appear and disappear. I have numerous reports over the years of large solid objects at low level that just slowly begin to fade away and vanish. In other cases, they instantaneously vanish, and in some cases, these things physically change one form to another. And I can give you an example of a very recent daylight, very low-level sighting where this happened, if you're interested.
Oh, yeah. Please do.
Okay, so this case now, you'll probably hear me talk about Fayette County. So one of the areas here in Pennsylvania that's very active is along the Chestnut Ridge. So the Chestnut Ridge is a mountain range that extends through Westmoreland, Fayette, Indiana County in southwest Pennsylvania. Extends down to a few miles in West Virginia outside of Morgantown. And for years and years, there have been incidents all along the ridge. But there are certain areas along the ridge that have more than a normal amount of these type of interesting reports. And Fayette County, a lot of the areas around Fayette County, for whatever reason, is very active, such as also here in certain areas of Westmoreland County. But this case occurred outside of Point Marion, PA. This was on November 16th of last year, 2 o'clock in the afternoon. It was an unusually nice day for November. It was around 60 degrees, mostly clear. And luckily, one of my research associates, Jim Brown, is up in Fayette County. I've been involved with him in research for many, many years. He's a very scientific guy, very high-tech guy. He actually has designed and built some of the best instrumentation I've ever seen to investigate these cases. So he's investigated a number of these strange events up in Fayette County. So anyhow, what happened was that afternoon, this woman, a neighbor, was going to take a walk outside because it was such a nice day and happened to notice this unusual object about 50 feet above her neighbor's home. And she's watching this thing, and it's a solid black, solid-looking triangular object with no lights on it. But what's so unusual is it's physically continually changing from a triangle to a square. And she's watching this thing for a while and can't figure out what it was, so she thought, I better go back in the house and call my neighbor whose house it's hovering over. So she calls on the phone, but there's no answer. So she decides she better walk over and talk to her neighbor. She gets over there and find the neighbor working outside. The neighbor had no idea this thing was over top of her home, so that neighbor pointed it out. So both of them were interviewed by Jim, and they're both watching this thing, and they watch as this thing has gained a little altitude. Now it's about 500 feet above the house, and it's doing exactly the same thing. It's changed one physical form to another. They continued to watch it for a few minutes until it moved straight up to the sky, became a dark spot, and went out of sight. That's just an example of some of the reports coming in.
Okay, so you say it was a triangular shaped object. Is it possible that the triangular shaped object, from their perspective, maneuvered around, turned to where now it looks like a square, and now it turns and looks like it's flat? Is that possible? It doesn't actually morph, but it rotates.
Well, it did not appear to be doing that, and they were quite close to it. I mean, they were standing right there watching this thing. And as the one witness explained, she said it was hard to give it a definitive size, but it appeared as a square that was drawing itself into a triangular form. One corner of the square would pull itself into the body, and at the same time, another area along the edge would extend out, become another point. That's how they were explaining it. So it's very, and there have been numerous other incidents of these type of things happening. I've had reports, even in recent years, in daylight, of very large, solid, cylindrical objects that look solid, metallic, that slowly, from one end, begin to fade away until the entire object is gone. The other thing that's been going on more and more over the years is that we get daylight reports of these objects of different configurations, from big rectangular objects to cylindrical other objects that enter clouds, but they never come out. And I've had cases where people pulled their cars off and watched these things go in the clouds. They had their cameras ready. Some people sat there for 45 minutes or more, and the objects never came out from the clouds.
Probably disappeared into space, right?
Well, something happened to them, that's for sure. We just don't understand what we're dealing with. But I've learned a lot more. And do I have the answers? I do not. Nobody has the answers to what's going on. There's a lot more to this than meets the eye. There's two areas that a lot of people in the research field and the public is not greatly aware of that I'm doing with quite a bit. And two of the areas is, one, there's increasing reports of these small spherical orbs, balls of light low to the ground. Last year, we had actually, not year 2021, now hold on, 2022, we had the biggest surge ever of these kind of reports across Pennsylvania. And they're going on over the country now, too, because we're getting these kind of reports. And I knew about these back in the 60s. I called them mini UFOs for years. And these objects are generally spherical, but not always. They're often just spherical balls of light, different colors, size often around size of a baseball to a golf ball to about a foot or two in diameter. But I have other reports of these things coming very close, and they appear to be metallic and solid as well. And what's very interesting, over the years, I've had incidents where these things have paced vehicles. I've had them actually enter people's cars and homes through open windows. I've had them go through the walls of the house. I've had them tap on the windows of people's homes and moving off. These are the kind of things you never hear about. But what was so intriguing about these reports from 2022 and then through last year, even though we get reports every year of them, not that often, but we had so many in 2022, and these were daylight incidents where these objects in daylight were extremely low to the ground and coming within feet of people. And I can give you some really great examples if you'd like to hear about them.
But definitely.
Okay,
first of all, Stan, this sounds like ball lightning at first.
Well, and that's the first thing we look for. And I can tell you, none of these cases I'm telling you about had the weather conditions to deal with ball lightning. And when you hear some of the details, you'll understand why.
Okay.
So I'll give you one, and I believe this one was April of 21. I could be wrong. Anyhow, so here was a case, again, Fayette County. So beautiful afternoon, to Amanda's wife, nice afternoon. They were outside digging in their yard, planting some little trees or something. They notice a distance away, I think it was around less than 100 feet away, they see this round silver object slowly gliding in their direction. This thing was around 2 foot in diameter, bright silver. They thought it was a Mylar balloon. As they're watching, it continues to move, glide slowly towards them, gets very close. And it's only about 10 feet above the fence. And at one point, there's like a slight electrical jolt that goes from the object to the ground, to the field, and it sets that part of the field on fire. They immediately put that little area of fire out, and everything was gone. The object was gone, nothing else. Jim, my research says it got there within 45 minutes. Had this been a firecracker, a Mylar balloon, there would have been a lot of residue, and there was absolutely nothing. But more interestingly, in October of 22, here's another instance, 6 o'clock in the morning. It was cold in the 40s up in the mountains. Fellow decided he was just in his robe and slippers, and his wife finds him sound asleep on the porch, which he would never do. Anyhow, when she finally was able to awaken him, which she said was very hard to get him awakened for whatever reason, he said he was walking out to get the newspaper just been delivered, and the small ball, the sphere of light, white light, about a foot in diameter, was hovering at eye level, and he got very close to it, and he said he got so tired he couldn't stay awake, and he immediately went over to the chair and fell asleep. 3 days later, about 40 miles away, up in the Laurel Highlands area, so you got the Chestnut Ridge, and then you have the Laurel Ridge, which is also very active with a lot of weird things. 2:30 in the morning, this woman gets up to go to the restroom. She has an old historical home with high ceilings. She comes out of the restroom, 5 feet away, hovering in her living room, a little bit over her head, is this about 2 foot diameter dark blue ball with a dark mass moving around inside of it. She said she remembered taking one step towards it. She felt like a slight electrical jolt, and she got so tired, she went to sleep right away. She said the next day she felt very weak, very, very sickly, and she said, I'm an insomniac. I don't fall asleep. She said for her to go to sleep like that was completely unusual, and I had two cases like that within a few days of each other is extraordinarily interesting. Those are the kind of things that have been going on. And again, I'm hearing this from researchers all over the country as well. The other thing that's very interesting, from all over the country and areas we have a history of Bigfoot sightings, here in Pennsylvania and many other parts around the country, I'm hearing this more and more now, researchers and witnesses are observing the unusual light phenomena or other cases, these small spheres of light coming out of the woods and coming up within feet of people. That's what's going on. And the other kind of cases that you rarely ever hear about, and they've been going on for years. I've investigated many, many incidents. Some of these are in my different books over the years. These are large, solid, low-level, solid objects, multiple witnesses, and various cases with different types of electromagnetic EM effects involved. And this is another thing that's shown up more and more in UFO cases, because one thing the public quite often asks is, well, how come you don't have any pictures? Well, I can tell you one, yes, we do have pictures. If you go to my website, you'll see some of the photographs were taken, especially of these cylindrical objects last year in Pennsylvania. But I do receive game cam pictures. I receive security camera pictures. We are getting photographs and pictures in. But there are other instances where people have attempted to take pictures more and more in recent years with their cell phones, with other type of equipment. And one of the things that's shown up in some cases, especially low-level reports, people have fully charged phones. They are attempting to take a picture. Within moments, the battery completely has drained the power. In other cases, their camera malfunctions, electronic malfunctions of the camera. I've heard this also with a lot of people with very high-tech night vision equipment who are trying to take pictures of their balls of light or other anomalies. Same thing is being reported, and I have numerous instances I can tell you about in past years where this same type of thing has shown up.
Yeah, that happens very often in crop formations and that type of thing within the parameters or within proximity of a UFO or cattle mutilations, that type of thing.
Right? Yeah, so it's been going on for years and years. And back in 73, and Dave, and now you and I have talked about this, and Bill probably is aware of it and some of the others. Back in 1973, here in Pennsylvania, we had the biggest UFO wave ever documented. Luckily, I had my first group already formed, and I had it already set up to cover the state of Pennsylvania. And we are very lucky we were able to respond as quickly as we did to this because, one, first, we had hundreds of UFO sightings all year long across Pennsylvania. And you got to remember, 1973, you didn't have the internet or cell phones like today. So a lot of people called the newspapers or the police departments, and luckily we were getting a lot of referrals from law enforcement, from news media, that go out to investigate these cases. And many of the newspapers at that time were publishing these kind of reports of what was happening in some areas. And in many instances, my teams were on the scene within minutes or hours after they occurred. And that's why we were able to document these things. I wrote these cases up in my Silent Invasion book in great detail. That's when some very strange things showed up that began to make myself and some of the skeptical researchers of my team aware that Bigfoot was much stranger than an unknown type of creature, and that the UFOs, there was something else involved as well. And I know we've talked about some of these cases, but, you know, some of them are amazing. If you want me to try to give you a briefer summary of them, because we can spend hours on one case, I'll be glad to give you a few examples.
Okay.
So going back to the interesting connection with the small spheres of light, during that massive wave in 73, when the reports came in north of Pittsburgh, September 73, you had two witnesses who were waiting for a friend to pick them up. They observed a 7-8 foot tall, hair-covered creature with white hair running across the road towards the woods, but in one of his hands, it is carrying a small globe of white light. And as this thing ran into the woods, a few minutes later, this object came across the sky and projected a beam of light down into the woods where it ran into. That was interesting. One of the most famous cases, I'm just going to give you a very quick summary of this report. It's been written up all over the world. Some of your listeners probably have heard about it. It's October 25th, 1973, outside of Uniontown, Pennsylvania. I get a call from a state trooper. He asked me if I get a team up there as soon as possible, that he just came back from investigating this incident. He thought it was very possible something was still up on the farm. So we got our team together that night. We got our radiation meters and our other equipment and found our way up to that area. The brief part of the story is you had about 15 witnesses that observed this barn-sized, huge, round object. It was white at the time. It was red at the time. It was about 100 feet off the ground, hovering and slowly beginning to move downward. The short part of the story is it ended up landing in this pasture. The farmer's son, who would be the adult in this group, was coming out to visit his family and owned the farm, and he saw the people standing outside watching this thing. He went to a better location to get a better look. It looked like it was going to land on his dad's property. He and two young boys decided to go up and see what this thing is. To make the story very short again, when they got up in the pasture, about 250 feet away, this object was now landed on the ground or just inches above it. But now it was not a complete sphere. It was about a 100-foot diameter bright white dome that was illuminating the whole area, making a whining noise. And anyhow, at the same time, there's two huge Bigfoot creatures standing in the field at the same time. That's a short part of the story, but I can tell you this. What happened was the older fellow took a couple shots at the creatures, which I don't recommend people doing, and he didn't know it, but in the ammunition he had two tracer bullets, so he just got that luminous trail. When he fired a second tracer bullet, the largest of the two creatures reached out as though to grab that tracer. It made a loud whining, crying sound, and that huge object in the field vanished. It didn't take off. It just disappeared. They turned around, started walking back along the fence line, And the guy at that point was firing live ammo from his 30-06 into these creatures with no effect on them whatsoever. When they ran out of there and went back to the home, took the family to a neighbor and called the state police. When the troop arrived 45 minutes later, they went up in the patrol car to the area to look for evidence. When I interviewed the trooper, he told me, he said, the area where the object was on the ground was self-luminescent and glowing, about 100 feet or more in diameter. He said the farm animals would not go near it. He said if he had a flashlight, he could barely see the beam. And he said, if I had a newspaper, I'm pretty certain I could have read the newspaper from the light coming off the glow. That's the very short part of the story. It's one of the longest, strangest cases on record. That was the case that convinced me and others that we're dealing with something that's much stranger. And I'm not suggesting in these reports that Bigfoot is connected directly to spaceships from another planet, because we don't know for sure what these objects are. And the more I know about it, for a lack of a better term, I'm telling you, there's a lot of different aspects of what we're dealing with, which is very strange and unusual. I wrote about this back in the 70s, and now it's going on all over the country and around the world.
Could these Bigfoot be interdimensional beings?
Well, that's what the evidence we found. One of the first things that was really intriguing in 1973. So my teams would got to some of these locations within minutes or hours after there was a Bigfoot sighting, for example. Mm-hmm. And even in the snow, we'd have these large series of unusual footprints with big strides between them that would go a distance and then suddenly abruptly stop when there should have been more tracks.
Mm-hmm.
And let me tell you, I had a lot of professional investigators on my team. I had an anthropologist. I had a podiatrist. I had forensic people. There's no way this could have been fabricated. Now, in the last several years, all over the country, people in the Bigfoot field are getting the same kind of reports coming in, where these tracks just suddenly abruptly end. And then in 73, as that's going on, and again, from widespread areas, many different counties, some miles and miles away, similar reports are coming in. The public had no way to know about all the details we were getting from all these other areas. Same thing showing up. We get reports of these things, even in daylight, of these huge hairy creatures that would physically vanish and moments later reappear somewhere else. And then we had the UFO and Bigfoot connection showing up, where we had a UFO sighting in a particular area. Within minutes to hours to days later, you would have a Bigfoot sighting or vice versa. And it gets much more complicated than that, what I found out now. For example, I'm sure many of your listeners today are aware historically of cases going back to 50s or 60s of large structured objects hovering or pacing vehicles. And sometimes when they are nearby, they would have EM effects. They would have a power loss. There would be a loss in the engine. The headlights would dim. The object would take off and the power would come back on. Something is rarely known about is the fact you have the same thing with some of the Bigfoot reports. So we have incidents in Pennsylvania and other states over the years where a Bigfoot was very near a vehicle, and the same thing. When the creature was nearby, the car would lose power, the creature would move off, and the power would come back on. And that's just a small part of what we've been finding. There is a lot more to this than anybody understands. You've all heard of Skinwalker Ranch, so you got to realize what I was dealing here with in 1972 and 73 with Skinwalker-type activity years before that. But here's what I found out. You can have a UFO sighting, a Bigfoot encounter, a crypt encounter, almost anywhere. But there are certain areas, for whatever reason, that this phenomena seems to focus and concentrate on in different areas. We have a number of them here in Pennsylvania, and they're all over the country now where these kind of reports are coming in. So some of these places have a long history of paranormal experiences, the balls of light below the ground, UFO sightings, screams and howls, strange footprints, Bigfoot and other strange creatures. And there is similarities to it. There is patterns to it. And the more I'm knowing about it, the more I think a lot of these things are somehow all interconnected. There's an energy connection to it. And one of the patterns I found years ago was that many close-range, low-level UFO sightings and many encounters with Bigfoot and other cryptids often occur in the vicinity of energy sources. So you have many, many reports around cell phone towers, communication towers, bodies of water, railroad tracks, high-tension power lines, power plants, gas wells, etc. I have no doubt that in a lot of instances, this is something that's a very common factor.
Okay, so nuclear power plants, is that what you mean?
Well, not only nuclear, but even coal power. Power plants of different types, but electrical high-tension power lines, very common in the vicinity of a lot of these incidents.
There's a theory that our atomic bomb tests and Hiroshima and Nagasaki, all of these tests opened up a wormhole to another dimension, and which sounds good to me on one level. However, these UFOs are in antiquity, so maybe that's not a valid point. What do you think?
Well, all I can tell you is this: here in Pennsylvania, going back to Bigfoot, there's Native American accounts for years and years talking about encounters with these creatures. Back in those days, they never called them Bigfoot. They called the wild man of the woods or the forest. Mm-hmm. With UFO sightings, there's 1,800 newspaper accounts from Pennsylvania of strange things seen in the sky from the early 1900s, and then many, many reports from the 40s onward to present day. So these things have been going on for years and years. It's an international phenomena. You know, to talk about what pilots saw, and first of all, yes, I believe a lot of things are explainable. First thing I look at with these orbs of light reports, these balls of light, is do we have the weather conditions for these type of things? And I can tell you that's not the case we're finding. Most of these occurred in beautiful afternoons. Mm-hmm. And I'll tell you of a case that happened in a minute. Let me see if I can find a report. I have so many reports in my head, even this year already. With the poor weather around here, we've had some very interesting cases coming in. Mm-hmm. But the case I was going to tell you about, this just occurred actually it would have been in October of last year. This was a nice afternoon. It was around 4 o'clock in the afternoon, and there were two people sitting in the living room, as I recall. And I'm trying to think of the details here a second. But anyhow, they were sitting there when it was just a few feet in front of them that there's a small sphere. I mean, this was a very small one. Now, some of those reports of the smallest of these smaller spherical objects are only about the size of an oversized firefly in some cases. But anyhow, this is about 4 o'clock in the afternoon. And this light, this 3-inch diameter ball of light that appeared to be solid with a definite round shape, was more of a kind of a light golden color. And it was fluttering around in the living room just a few feet away from them. Then it rose up to about 4 feet and just hovered there. Then suddenly, about 10 similar objects, which they think may have come from the original one, suddenly appeared. They were all fluttering around in about a 6-foot area. And after about 1 or 2 minutes, they gathered together and they all vanished, except it looked like the one main object stayed there. It moved around. It moved behind a television set and it was gone. I mean, these are the kind of reports that you rarely ever hear about, but this is what is happening out there. And the public has no idea what's going on.
Was this in a rural area or urban area?
It was kind of a both. It was rural, but not that rural, but it was there was more population in than normal area around some of those places.
Right. Okay. So, what is the most compelling? Tell us one of the most compelling cases in Pennsylvania of late, or have you already told us?
Well, there were many, many amazing UFO incidents last year, and especially involving these triangular objects. And there were cases both in eastern Pennsylvania and northern Pennsylvania across the different areas. And there are some pretty good pictures on the website of some of these reports, by the way. But let me give you a really interesting one. So this was September 3rd of last year. This is Cumberland County near the Susquehanna River, Well, there have been other reports for years. And by the way, you know, the government's interested in what they call transmedium objects. So these are objects in the sky that go from the sky into the water and out of the water. I've been talking about this for years and years in Pennsylvania. We've had reports for years of these objects coming in and out of the rivers and lakes of Pennsylvania, including mm-hmm. last year I heard a report. So this is going on. But anyhow, so this occurred around 9 o'clock in the evening. This witness was going outside to do a chore and take her dog for a walk. Suddenly, there was this bright flash of light in the sky, like a starburst, she said. The dog, which is deaf, was sitting in a sitting position looking up towards the sky. That's when the witness saw what the dog was looking at. Hovering about 300 feet over her building was a large, solid, black, triangular object with rounded corners. There was enough moonlight to illuminate the area around the object. She said the surface of the object had a flat, matte black color. She had a clear view of the undercarriage and back section of the object. There were no individual lights on the object. She could only describe the size as massive and much larger than medical helicopters fly over the area. When I interviewed the witness, she described what looked like two circular protuberances on the back section she thought were possibly vents. It was in that area she noticed what she surmised was an orange-colored metal that was cooling from intense heat. She said the cooling effect did not occur all at once. She observed what looked like some type of indentations or protuberances on the bottom surface. And she said the object hovered. She noticed a deep yet barely audible humming sound and then a one-click type noise as the object began to slowly move. She said the object moved so fast that it looked like a smudge and never saw it move off across the sky. It just vanished. And this is something we're hearing from so many reports of large solid objects that suddenly just vanish right in front of people's eyes. That's going on more and more.
To go to give us your website where people can go and see some of these cases.
Yeah, the website is Stan Gordon, GORDON, stangordon.info, stangordon.info. There's also contact information, how you can contact me by phone or email. And there's a lot of interesting reports from the last few years that you can go through the website. There's pages and pages. What you see on there is just an example of the reports coming in.
Mm-hmm. Very good. Okay, so you were the primary investigator of the 1965 Kecksburg UFO crash. Tell us your findings in that case.
Today we could talk for weeks about it. But I was a 16-year-old kid that was already interested in UFOs, and I remember that night very well. I happened to be tuning in to KDK Radio in Pittsburgh, which was the primary radio station. They had a pretty well-known talk show called Contact, and they had a guest on that some of you will recognize. His name was Frank Edwards. I wanted to tune in to listen to Frank Edwards, and I listened to the show, and surprisingly, almost the entire program focusing on this breaking news story, this brilliant fiery object was seen from Ontario, Canada, over Michigan, Ohio, and Pennsylvania. And that station, as well as radio and TV, police departments, newspapers, all over the Pittsburgh area around 4:47 p.m., were just getting jammed with reports of this object that came over the greater Pittsburgh area. And there was a lot we did not know at the time. I began documenting it. I was running back and forth back in those days from the old black and white console TV in the living room to the other room, listen to the radio, stay up for hours and hours. I wasn't even driving yet. And as the evening continued on, KDK TV was breaking in with live reports later that evening that the military was now arriving in the Kecksburg area to search for an unidentified flying object. And so I took all the notes I could, and the next day, the first thing I did, I went to the local newsstand to pick up all the local papers. I was hoping, boy, I sure hope this makes the news. And there it was, front page in all the area papers. The Greensburg Tribune Review, which is a local paper, had two editions, front page, several different stories. The Pittsburgh Press, the Post Gazette, it made statewide and local and national news, and it was a huge, huge story. And but anyhow, there was a lot we did not know at the time. And what made it so interesting was that evening, again, as reports are coming in, and reports are coming in of the military showing up, that The reason they shut it up there was that locals reported something fell out of the sky and went down in the outskirts of Kecksburg, not in the little village of Kecksburg, outside of the village of Kecksburg, and that a search was being conducted to look for whatever it was. So interesting, the next day, it's out in the news that they had made a thorough search during the night, the early morning hours of the wooded area. They found absolutely nothing, and the official government response was people had mistakenly seen a bright meteor in the sky, but nothing had fallen to the ground. However, as the weeks and months and years went on, I tracked down hundreds of people who were involved. That included law enforcement, state troopers, many volunteer firemen who were there, but also many reporters. You had reporters there from all the major newspaper, radio, and TV from Pittsburgh who were on the scene that night. Many of them saw the military personnel or equipment. Some interacted with them. They all had very interesting stories. And anyhow, what I also found out was that within a very short time after some of the locals saw the object fall from the sky into the woods, they went down into the woods and came across this large metallic acorn-shaped object semi-buried in the ground. So some of these people were within feet of it. And this thing is about 10 to 12 feet in length, about 8 to 10 feet in diameter. One solid piece of metal shaped like a big metallic acorn, kind of an off-gold bronze color, but it's seamless. That's what people just don't understand about the description. There's no weld marks, no seams, no fuselage, no windows, nothing they could see. But on the raised-up back part of the object, like you would see on the back of an acorn, there were reportedly some type of very unusual markings described more as some type of odd symbols on the surface. Luckily, one of the witnesses, who was a young volunteer fireman who was only a few feet away from it and went to his grave wanting to know what it was he saw that night, because of his family background, he was familiar with the fact that it was not Soviet symbols on an object. He said he was familiar with that, and that's not what it was. And he always said, after going over the years looking at odd symbols and books, he said it looked like some type of ancient Egyptian hieroglyphics from what he can remember from memory. Mm-hmm. But it's an amazing story, and I can tell you this because I had independent sources over the years that confirmed to me that the object was taken out of that area early the next morning with a military convoy on a large military flatbed tractor trailer covered with a tarp. It was taken to Lockbourne Air Force Base near Columbus, Ohio, during the early morning hours of December 10th. I actually interviewed one of the security team members who guarded the object, and he told me they were given a shoot-to-kill order to anybody approach that hangar without the proper clearance. It stayed there for a short time. Then that convoy, that truck, and the object continued on to Wright-Patterson Air Force Base. And later, I was told exactly where it went to. It was not taken to Hangar 18. It was taken to another building on the base itself.
Okay. Was anyone able to get a picture of this object before the troops arrived?
All I can tell you is this. For years and years, I have heard reports that there were photographs taken. I learned over the years that there were at least two newsmen on the scene that night that had cameras and took pictures and reportedly had the films confiscated out of their cameras. I also understood that John Murphy, who was a news director at WHJB in Greensburg, who would have been the first reporter on the scene, who apparently got down in there before the other authorities arrived on the scene, and he was in radio contact, I found out, with some of the other people connected with the radio station, and told them that he had gone down in the woods, he saw the object with the unusual markings on it, and he got pictures. And reportedly, from what I recall, they did confiscate the film out of the camera, but he had another role they didn't get. And I definitely talked to at least one other person at the station who remembered seeing the picture. All that stuff disappeared. All his notes, all the pictures never came to surface. And what we learned later, and it was talked about by people at the station, that sometime, I believe within the next several days after he's gathering all this information to write up a special radio documentary called Object in the Woods, that apparently these government men came in. There were other people there, confirmed this to me at the station. They took him into one of the studio rooms. When they left, he was highly, highly upset, and he had indicated to one of the managers that they had confiscated most of all the interviews he had done back then would have been on tape. So that's just a small part of the story. There's a lot more to it. If you go to my website, for the 58th anniversary from last year, I have a big report I put on about Kexburg and a lot of the very interesting things I uncovered about that case. And what that object was, we still don't know for sure, but there's a lot more to the story. And the one thing we were able to clarify after many years was the fact that when this object came in from the Pittsburgh area, moved down here towards Westmoreland County, it moved over to the city of Greensburg, where I live. I did not see it. It moved out towards Route 30 East, but then it made a turn to the south. And it moved out towards the mountains of Laurelville. So you had numerous witnesses all along that path in these small rural communities. According to one of the witnesses that watched it, it kind of hesitated over the mountain, began to track back towards the outskirts of Kexburg, made another turn, and then dropped down into the woods. And the locals I interviewed and saw it go down said it did not come down at a high rate of speed like you would have with a reentry of space debris or a meteor. It came down almost like it made a controlled landing. And there were no reports of any parachutes observed at the scene. And the object on the ground was very much intact.
So with all, with all those maneuvers, they tried to sell the meteor story, right?
Well, that's the official explanation, but we've learned a lot more. And many of those people did come forward over the years. Many of them remained anonymous because of various reasons why. A lot of these people back in 1965, they were kids or young teenagers. Well, a lot of them grew up to be, you know, educators, police officers, people in important positions, said for various reasons they didn't want to go public. But many, many of these people did, and very unfortunately, many of these people have now gone to their grave. And many of these people, their lives were changed. They took a lot of ridicule. Their families took a lot of ridicule. And they stayed by their stories because they knew what they saw and experienced that night. And they never had the answer.
Are there still witnesses in that area who remember this event?
Oh, many. Every year, you know, the Kexburg firemen, who the members of the fire department were involved that night in helping to close down the roads with the traffic control where the hundreds of people came out. One of the stories we heard was, and there were many, many, that when some of the military brass got on the scene, they asked the Kexburg firemen, they had a four-wheel drive pumper truck. They asked them to drive some of the brass down on the pumper truck towards the woods for the crash area. But once they got near it, they stopped them. They let the brass got out and went to the crash scene, and they made the firemen go back. But the military did not know that some of the other locals had already gone down there before they arrived on the scene.
Mm-hmm. So it's these locals that are still alive, right?
Well, there's some still alive, but you got to remember, it wasn't just local people involved. This is being broadcast that evening. It's making huge news on Pittsburgh area radio and TV. Hundreds of people from all over Western PA began to descend on that small community. I mean, they had to block the roads off and everything. There was such a traffic jam. And they were trying to keep people away from where the object came down. But they didn't know that some people did find a way down there while this was taking place. It's a remarkable story, you know, what we've uncovered about it. There are so many independent, interesting accounts. And regardless of what the object was, it's an amazing account.
So is this video that you did about Kexburg, the untold story, is that available, a documentary available anywhere?
It's still available on DVD. It's available on the internet through Amazon and UFO TV video. They have it available. So you can still get it, yes. And it's very detailed, and I can tell you, you'll see things on there you won't see anywhere else. It's got many, many compelling interviews with a lot of witnesses, most who are now deceased.
Yeah. Did you say YouTube as well?
I believe it might be on YouTube through UFO video. I think they still have it on there, but I know Amazon, I believe you can still order it through Amazon as well.
Oh, I see. Okay. So On another subject, Stan, what is your take on David Grush and the Pentagon's admission in general?
Well, you know, I've followed it pretty closely. I've heard what Grush had to say, and I'm very much convinced when I heard what he had to say that he is telling the truth. Because a lot of what he said, I knew a lot, I heard a lot about these things back many, many years ago. And just looking at the Kexford case, I mean, there is no doubt that there was a quick response to whatever this thing was. Because some of the locals said to me, they said, within the hour after this thing fell, there was already a small military amount of activity in the area. So we're talking like a military jeep, for example, moving around. It was over the next several hours that you had a larger contingency of military equipment and personnel that began to show up from different directions. And that was pretty quick. And also, very interestingly, you know, the only document that showed up, the only official document after many years of FOIA searches and searches for documents on this, was the Project Blue Book report. But interestingly, the Project Blue Book report does not have an under Kexburg. So Kexburg is a small community in Mount Pleasant Township, Westmoreland County. And Kexburg has the same zip code as Mount Pleasant, PA. So it's a little confusing. But anyhow, what I found out was I interviewed a family who was involved in the incident. They're all deceased. At the time it happened, they were interviewed by an Air Force officer. They live within walking distance of where the object fell. They, however, had an ACME mailing address. The Air Force report is under ACME, Pennsylvania, not Kexburg. And interestingly, as you read through that document, of course, it said there was a search and nothing was found. But there's a lot of interesting things in there showing that there were numerous agencies that were trying to find out more information about what happened, what took place. And one of the quotes in one of the handwritten memos was, and again, I'm trying to go from memory, a three-man team has been dispatched to ACME, PA, to investigate and pick up an object to start the fire. I think that's pretty accurate. So that was very interesting right there.
An object that started the fire.
Well, even though there were no reports of a fire, however, some of the initial reports were that moments after this object fell, they saw a column of kind of a bluish-gray smoke coming up from that area, but it dissipated very quickly. And maybe that's where they got the report of the fire. Because I've had no confirmation of any fire in the immediate area where the object fell.
So are you aware of any other so-called whistleblowers who plan to come forward?
No, I'm not. I've heard a lot of stories, a lot of rumors about it. There were people years and years and years ago that I believe would probably have had knowledge about these type of incidents. And these incidents, unfortunately, they're all passed away. But I think a lot of what Grush said, that indeed a lot of these things have happened. I've heard reports of years, and many other researchers back in the 60s and 70s, you know, we came across these kind of incidents. I was very close with the late Len Stringfield. You probably recognize his name. He was kind of considered the father of UFO crashes. And Len and I, you know, we talked a lot. We shared a lot in just talking about some of these interesting things. And he had a lot of good information coming in. He was actually involved in some aspects of the Kexford case, investigating some of the Ohio leads I had on it. And I believe from some of the people I interviewed over the years that they were telling me the truth, and they had no reason to lie about it because they sure didn't want any publicity about what they knew. And I think someday, slowly, the doors will open. But to be honest with you, I don't think anytime soon there's going to be any type of massive acknowledgement about the existence of these things. I think the government's in a position where they do know more than they're telling the public, but they do not have the answers either. I think they're finding what I found a long time ago. This is a much more complex phenomenon, that whatever we're dealing with is far beyond our present scientific understanding. And I think the new terminology they're using now is much better, unidentified anomalous phenomena, because I'm telling you, there is a lot more to this. A lot of these things, whether we like it or not, they're interconnected. It's a part of the same source, whatever that might be, which none of us understands right now, but we're dealing with various types of entities and these crafts or objects, whatever they are, that have a physical and a non-physical component to it. They appear and disappear. They leave evidence of time, and then they're gone. And that's what's going on now all over the country and around the world. I've talked to many other researchers for years that are getting the same kind of reports.
Yeah, a lot of people say what they see, these objects in the sky, are not really nuts and bolts type vehicles, but biological entities.
Well, again, many, many theories on it. I don't know if they're biological or not, but they seem to have the capability to change physical form. And we're getting a lot of reports again over the years of unusual clouds, for example, that just suddenly appear out of nowhere. We had a case several years ago in the afternoon on a major highway in the afternoon where cars were all slowing down and stopping, and they're seeing this very large cloud in the sky that looked different than the other clouds, about as big as a school bus, if I remember, and this thing is zigzagging in the sky, up and down, right and left. Somebody said like a school of fish, and then moments later just vanished. And these are the kind of things that are rarely discussed or talked about, and sometimes it seems the stranger the detail, the more possibly they are to be maybe actual reports.
Yeah, they still don't. People still don't want to come out with their sightings because they're afraid of ridicule. Am I right?
Oh, that's exactly what it is. I mean, I deal with these reports almost every day, whether it's current or past reports. It's just amazing. And I've talked to so many credible people, even in recent weeks, with all these different anomalies. I mean, I had a hunter a few weeks ago in the afternoon that just, he had an experience that scared the heck out of him. He had never experienced before, was not with the UFO. Well, I'll put that report out at some point when I have more details on it. I've had a woman that called me a few weeks ago that was in tears crying. Something very strange happened with her. I mean, I interview hunters. I mean, some of these guys and men and women have been out in the woods for years and years hunting. And after they have their encounter, their lives are changed.
Oh, yeah.
They don't want to go back out in the woods anymore. I mean, I talked to first responders, police officers, pilots for years talking about these reports. And none of them want to make official reports because they don't want to be called crazy. And this is what you deal with.
Yeah. But it seems like sooner or later these reports do come out. And glad of it, you know, glad of it.
Right. Well, if it wasn't for the witnesses I talked to, you wouldn't be hearing about these type of things. Yeah. And a lot of people don't care if you share the report and the information. They just don't want to be identified.
Right, right. I was going to say, how many of them want to remain anonymous?
Almost everybody. And the stranger it is, the least likely is that they're going to tell anybody about it. That's just how it is. And last year, some of the Bigfoot sightings, many were in daylight at very close range. I mean, we're talking the afternoon, you know, 30, 40, 50 feet away from people. We had one incident a couple years ago up on the ridge between Indiana and Westmoreland County. The sun is coming up. This is way in the woods. I was up on the property a few times, very credible people. This woman's on the property. Suddenly she sees coming out of the woods, there's this 8 to 9 foot tall, huge, cherry-covered Bigfoot carrying a deer over its shoulder. It stopped. They had eye contact. It made a loud grunt when it saw her and turned off running with the deer off into the woods.
Well, Stan, once again, give us your email address. Give us your website.
It's stangordon.info, stangordon.info. They can reach me by phone at 724-838-7768. The best email, it's on my website, is sightings@stangordon.info. And all my books and the DVD are available on Amazon.com and BarnesandNoble.com.
Dan Gordon, I want to thank you so much for joining us tonight.
And I want to thank you, the loyal listener. Go to WHFR's homepage, scroll down to We Are Not Alone, and click on the headline, which will take you to where you can find my website with all the archive shows. Or click on the Talk Shows button, then the We Are Not Alone button for the latest show archives. And please join me the first Monday of each month at 2 p.m. when we will again explore the mysteries of the UAP phenomenon. And until then, this is David Twitchell reminding you to keep an eye on the sky.